Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBQ 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
So joining us today is a crime mystery fiction writer and podcaster. And he's got a new book just coming out. It's called A Body on the Hill. It's part of the Mitch O'Reilly Mysteries, and it's book two. So, Brad Shreve, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Well, so Brad, how did your life start? No. how did you get into this fiction writing? Like, have you always been a writer or been into writing and fictions and mystery, or where did that start for you?
Well, I think like most any writer, I can say I've always wanted to be a writer. As a kid, I read Encyclopedia Brown and was always angry I could never solve the crime. But that's where my love of mystery began. But it wasn't until I was older and read My Side of the Mountain by Gene Craighead George, I believe. And I just fell in love with that book, and I said, I think one day I'm going to be a writer. If somebody can make me want to go to the mountain and live inside of a tree, they've done a pretty good job of writing.
Mm-hmm. So when you were young, so that was just a few years ago.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, the real catalyst was Doonesbury, the comic strip.
Oh.
I was kind of a political junkie at an early age. I was only 7 when that comic strip came out, and I absolutely loved it. And I wanted to be a cartoonist. And so through my teens and actually probably into my early 20s, I started creating cartoons. I was trying to create one to submit, and it was satirical. And I took a lot of sketching classes. I became pretty good at drawing. But I found that I enjoyed the writing better than the drawing part, and that started taking over. Mm-hmm. I was writing satire, which I was not very good at, but at least I was writing. And then I got in the corporate world, and I lost my way for a while.
Oh, yeah. That happens to a lot of people. Book two of your Mitch O'Reilly mystery. So explain that. So who is Mitch O'Reilly, and what's kind of the format of this?
In this book, Mitch O'Reilly is 31 years old. He has a twin sister named Josie, and he used to be kind of a fun-loving party guy in college with his sister, And he went a little too far, and his grades dropped, so he joined the military and wound up in Afghanistan and served two tours in Afghanistan, and it didn't come back in a good way. He had PTSD. He wound up living on his sister's couch for a while until she got him a job with a investigative agency. And he did that for a number of years till he got his license and didn't really enjoy it. So he left that to open up his own business, and which is a spy supply store that he still owns. And as I say in the book, he doesn't make enough off the store to stop being a PI, and he doesn't make enough off being a PI to close the store. So he's kind of a reluctant detective.
Kind of sounds like a writer.
Very true. He's snarky. He has kind of a negative view on life, but he really roots for the underdog. He'll buy a bag of socks and take it to the homeless and hand them out. And there's a homeless guy who's a war veteran who he allows to sleep in the doorway of his store so every night after he closes. So he has a heart. And he wants to get back to where he used to be. But that's a struggle.
So that's pretty complex. As in, I'm a true crime writer, so this is all fascinating to me. And so I jump in and say, well, how do you develop this character? This character you've got, he's been to war twice. He's got BDSM. He's got, he's really stressed out, and you've got him. You've got all this detail. Do you take this from people you know? Do you take it from? Or do you just imagine this whole thing? Is this all in your mind?
Well, coming up with characters can be so different depending on the character. There are some characters that may be a combination of a good friend of mine and a woman I happened to talk to in Starbucks. There was a day I was in the city bus, and there was the bus driver. We were in a quiet neighborhood, yet she stopped at every single bus stop. Open the door, close the door, and would go to the next bus stop and do the same thing. And after a while, she said, "Where are all the people?" Now, I don't know if I'll ever use her in a book, but you better believe I have her written down. Now, Mitch is a bit different. I didn't realize it until I was done. Mitch is me in many ways. I have bipolar disorder, and so I deal with anxiety and depression the same way people with PTSD do, though I'm not going to say they're the same thing. And I tend to be snarky like he is, but he gets to say it. I don't necessarily get to speak what's always on my mind.
Hey, so this was kind of you were kind of starting to talk about this. When you started these books, Brad, did you start with him then? Did you start with Mitch? Where did you start?
I did start with Mitch.
From the start, he was the hero. That's who was going to...
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah,
my very first book was Mitch. My first book, A Body in a Bathhouse, I actually came up with the title first.
Wait, the title came before everything?
That book, yes.
Even before Mitch? Even before you had the character?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The title hit me, and I said, oh, I love this title. I've got to write a book about this. And that's when I developed Mitch.
Huh.
There's always bodies in the bathhouse.
I wouldn't know, of course. I've only heard of these things.
Well, yeah, when you get a little bit older, you might experience something like that, but you're still a chicken, right? So.
The idea for that one just threw me, because there are a lot of bodies in a bathhouse, but they're dying off, and so there weren't that many, and so I actually had a pretty small group of characters in that book. It could have almost, it's hard to imagine a bathhouse, it could have almost been written as a cozy, because there was such a small group of people there at that particular time. But I didn't. I expanded the world quite a bit more than that. And there's not a whole lot of relationship in sex, but there's a little of that in too, which you don't find in a cozy.
Yeah, I like that. Now explain that to me, actually. Explain that to a lot of listeners, because we've crossed over into fiction just in the last month or two. So what do you mean by cozy?
Cozy, if you tend to think of Miss Marple from Agatha Christie, there's a murder. Usually it's in a small environment or a small group of people. There may be a romance, not usually, but there may be a romance, but there is no sex, and there is no blood and gore. So, and that tends to be a cozy, and it's always an amateur sleuth, which is another reason why Mitch couldn't be in a cozy. It's always an amateur sleuth in a cozy.
So you don't really include a lot of sex in these books?
I did a little bit in the first one. In the second one, I was going to put quite a bit more, and I took it out because I didn't feel like it was necessary. Obviously, the first one has a little bit. It's in a bathhouse.
Right.
But the second book, when I put the sex in, I really looked at it, and I said, does this add to the story in any way? And I said, not really. And I took it out. So I have more of a fade to black, which means, you know, they kiss and shut the door, and you know what happens when they wake up in the morning.
So it's more important. I'm taking this that it's more important for you to write a book, and it's about the story, and if sex is part of the story, you'll put it in, but you're not going to put it in just for, you know, just for the extra tent, you know, making people excited because you can have sex.
Exactly. I mean, Mitch used to play around quite a bit, and he bumps into frequently guys that he used to meet online, and they're like, hey, Mitch, let's hook up. And so it's obvious that there has been a lot of sex involved, but it doesn't need to be on the page. I'm sure there will be times where I feel like it needs to be, but at this point in the latest novel, A Body on the Hill, I didn't see it as necessary.
In this next one, Brad, you mentioned that there's also relationship elements. Is that something that you explore more in the second book?
Yes. Mitch meets in the first book. Mitch meets a guy. It's more of a tease than an actual relationship. The guy he meets, Trent, once more, but with Mitch, with his PTSD and the problems he's dealing with and his crazy life, just isn't ready for that yet. This second book explores that a little more. But I'm not going to say whether they get together or not.
Does that worry you? Like when we had Robert Ennis on, and he was saying that on some of his books he was doing it the same way, and he would get complaints. People would write, you know, reviews, as they do, and he would say that they would complain that they'd go, well, it's a great story, but where's the cock? Well, you know, that's just what he said, right? I mean, that's what
he said.
That's what he, you know.
And he's right in many ways. I haven't particularly gotten reviews like that yet. I have looked through Goodreads and Amazon and looked at some good writers that I enjoy that are gay writers. And to many, there's an assumption if it's gay, there's going to be male-male sex. And I'll look at their good reviews, and even their good reviews begin with, well, there wasn't any sex, but, and then they tell about the story. Like, obviously there should have been sex. This is a gay novel. Why wasn't there? And that disappoints me in a lot of ways.
So, Brad, I guess in this genre, there's kind of a divide between, or a spectrum, I guess, where some books do have a lot more on the romantic side, some have a lot more on the mystery. And it sounds like, well, from what I know from your first book, that these are definitely in the mystery side. How do you come up with the mystery plot? Like you said, you started with the title. How did you build a crime out of that?
The first book, the crime was, if it's going to be in a small environment, how was this going to happen?
Okay.
And And it was with a knife, because how else would you kill somebody in a bathhouse other than strangulation, which is I guess he could do. And the characters just developed in I like diversity.
Mm-hmm.
So, and in a bathhouse, it gave me that. Because I could have people, I have people that live in million-dollar homes in the Hollywood Hills, and I have people that live in rundown apartments in MacArthur Park. And they were all part of the bathhouse in the scene. Now, in A Body on the Hill, it's very similar. Mm-hmm. Now, my idea for the crime for that was I like to bike, walk the trails up near the Hollywood sign.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, how can I work this into a book? And back in 1912, back in 2012, a severed head was found near the Hollywood sign, as well as some body parts. A man killed his, I don't know if they were partners or boyfriends, but a man killed his boyfriend, and he's in prison now and still doesn't to this day say why he murdered the other guy. But I thought, this is fantastic. So that's where I got the idea for A Body on the Hill.
Now, that's cool. Yeah.
Now, unfortunately for me, since 2012, the security, I hiked up there to the top to look at the security since the last time I'd been there, and it's tremendously different. There's cameras and wires, and there's a full-time police officer up there. There are helicopters. So it's much more secure area, not just because of that body incident, because of vandalism and everything else that they had. And so I had to do – the body is found on the hill, but it's a little further down the hill under the Hollywood sign. It's not right at the Hollywood sign where I originally wanted it to be, because that just wouldn't have been possible.
Sounds like you were planning this.
Don't piss me off.
Yeah. Well, and that brings up the next question, because we've had a few authors on now that write crime fiction that say that you know, that they only put people that they don't like in the book. Do you take people that you've met that you think, what an awful person, or you have a big fight with, or that are just really rude on the street somewhere or something? Do you take that person and create a character based on them?
I do. I haven't created a character that I murdered because I don't like this person in real life, which you hear joked about a lot. The characters, as I said earlier, they're made up of different people, and yes, a lot of my characters do have personalities of people I know. Some of them are just personalities out of the blue.
Hmm. That's interesting.
I don't always know where they come from.
Oh. So, and that's interesting. So how far do you want to go with Mitchell Riley? Are you going to do an extensive series, or are you going to kill him off eventually, or kind of what kind of plans do you have for that?
I don't think I'll kill Mitch off. I think eventually I hope to give him a happy ending. I don't ever guarantee that, but I can't see me not giving him a happy ending. In my head, I see it as probably a 5-book series, because that's I can picture the next 3 books after these 2. But who knows, if continue to love him and readers continue to love him, I could go 20 books.
Hmm. Well, and if you're giving happy endings, it probably will go 20 books.
Yeah, I can't guarantee there'll be a happy ending in every book, but eventually he'll have his happy ending.
So now each book is onto itself. Like, you don't need to, like, I could pick up this new book. I don't have to have read the first book in order to get into the story, right?
That's correct. Actually, it's funny, in my newsletter I sent out, I promised my readers that I would never write a cliffhanger, that every book will be a standalone. Now, of course, there's references to things that happened in the previous book, but not enough to give away the story. They are standalone. You can take A Body on the Hill and read it by itself without reading the bathhouse book.
Hmm. So what's your feeling on gay written mysteries, and that, as in, do you feel like it's
easy to get it published, or do you think that there's still a struggle in the mainstream publishing world?
In the mainstream publishing world, I think it's hard to get published if you don't have the sex. There are several publishers that really promote having more what's called male-male relationship. If nothing else, a romance, and sex always helps. There are some that don't, but traditional publishing is just hard to get into. I chose, from after speaking to a good number of people, I chose to self-publish with no qualms about it, after speaking to enough writers that both traditionally publish, those that self-publish, and those that have done both.
Who do you think most of your readers are?
Most of my readers, I think, are a good mix of male and female. Males mostly gay. Females a real mix. Well, females mostly straight women.
Yeah, I hear that a lot. So what do you think it is about, the desire for a lot of straight women to read about male romance?
Well, I think women tend to be the number one readers anyway. The number of women that read far outweighs the number of men. And I think they are more open-minded. This is my guess. I think they just like a good story, and they are more open-minded to what they read. Why they like male-male romance is a good question, and I don't know if it's just because it's something they don't know and want to explore more into it, or if they're titillated by it in some way. I don't know that answer. I'm surprised by it, because most male-male romance novels are read by straight women.
Yeah, I've heard that. You know, my personal theory on something like that is probably, I think that straight females would like more romance from their men, and a lot of men don't. That a lot of men are, you know, wham bam, and not really into the romance, or saying a lot of things. They don't talk a lot. Perhaps male-male romance, there's more intimacy, there's more talking.
Well, and if I could jump, I do think, you know, people come to the genre for a lot of reasons, but another, I would agree with that, Alan, maybe another reason is that in a same-sex relationship or sexual encounter, or whatever, you know, the book might be dealing with, like, there's more that has to be negotiated, and the gender roles aren't as clearly defined, where I've spoken to a number of women who have told me they get frustrated by the alpha male and the submissive female in a lot of heterosexual romance. And, you know, you can't do it the same way, when you have two guys. So, I mean, there's more need for the flexibility or nuance or something like that. So, I mean, I know there's a lot of reasons, but that's another one that I've heard mentioned.
Well, you make a good point, Greg, but there's also a lot of women that really enjoy gay novels where there's an alpha male and what is it?
Beta, yeah, like a femme guy or a small
yeah,
a
femme guy.
Yeah.
I'm totally drawing a blank here, but where there's an alpha male, they really enjoy that. It's a different segment, I think.
That's why I said I think there's a lot of reasons. Yeah, but you're right. There are people that want those same dynamics. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, they want the big bear taking down the twink.
Oh, man. Well, and to be fair, I think there are plenty of guys that like that, too. I don't think it's just women that like, you know, I mean, like, there's an audience for all of this stuff.
Oh, absolutely. There's quite a few men that enjoy male romance, and I can't deny that. I'm not a big romance fan or erotica fan. My husband loves erotica. No, I shouldn't say loves erotica, but he enjoys it. I get a little bored by just romance, just because I don't always want to be guaranteed a happy ending. I like happy endings, but I don't want to necessarily be guaranteed one.
Brad, what does that look like in your, like, what would an unhappy ending look like in one of your books? Would Mitch not close a murder? Would someone get away, like, scot-free from a crime?
No, I wouldn't do that. Mystery writers would be furious if a crime isn't solved. I can't guarantee a happy ending, that's not the part I mean. The crime itself definitely has to be solved. But in the personal life of the individual, that I don't think always has to be an happy ending. I don't think the person needs to be killed off, but their life isn't necessarily better when you reach the end.
Hmm. Wow. So when you write these books, what is it that you want people to get out of the book at the end of the book? So I go pick up the book and I read it. What is it you hope I walk away with?
Well, A Body in a Bathhouse, what I've been told frequently is it's a really good beach summer read, and that thrills me. Because what I want to be able to do is just entertain people. I'm not out to send a message. I may write a book someday where I feel like there's an important message that I need to get across. But right now, I just want to entertain. I want people to be taken away for a few hours and enjoy a good book.
Hmm. Now, another thing about you is you're the operator and owner of the Gay Mystery Podcast. So tell us, how did that start for you, and what is it?
Well, it started because I didn't know about the gay mystery genre. When I was younger, before I came out, and even after I came out, there used to be these little nooks in, like, Barnes & Noble that said gay and lesbian. And it was a tiny little section, and you kind of snuck over there and would look. And they were always either literary novels or they were nonfiction. And I didn't know that genres existed, such as romance or mystery. And about 10 years ago, I read probably my first gay mystery novel, which was by Mark McNeese, who I believe was a guest on your show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it was Murder at Pride Lodge. And I read it, and I'm like, oh, my God, I've never seen anything like this. And it didn't clue me in right away that there were more. Because as I explored more, I kept running into romance, or romance with a little bit of mystery into it. But once I stumbled on other writers such as Marshall Thornton and Michael Nava, I realized that it's a much larger genre. So I said, if I don't know about gay mysteries, other people must not know either. And I wanted to start the podcast to get the word out there to share that information. In addition, a lot of people, like Greg Ash, has a huge fan base, but they may not know about other writers. And there may be, Michael Nava may have his fan base. I wanted these people to listen to the show and learn, wow, there's all these writers. There's enough authors. There's enough readers to share. So mystery readers are avid readers. They may read, a book a day or a book a week. So I want to just spread the word and get the word out there that gay mystery genre exists. I was voted on a different podcast as the best novel of the year last year. And when it was announced, they did the best TV show, the best movie, and the best novel. And my book was listed as the best novel. And they said, a gay mystery. Who knew such a thing existed? And I'm like, yes, that's exactly what I'm trying to get across.
Well, and Brad, another thing I think your podcast has done that's really interesting is with your different guests, you've really explored a lot of the history of the genre, right? Don't you think that's come out in a lot of your conversations?
Definitely has. The genre started, well, it started in the pulp fictions back, in the 60s and probably earlier, where it was, let's say,
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Mystery. It was really sex hidden as a mystery so that people could get away with selling it. And then Joseph Hansen in the early 70s was really, he's kind of considered the start of the gay mystery novels. And slowly we started seeing a lot more authors picking up on that. And it really started growing. This is all I learned from authors on the podcast. It really started growing until the AIDS crisis. And then it seemed to be a backlash where traditional publishers were less likely to publish gay novels. And that includes gay mysteries for whatever reason. And fortunately, we're seeing it come forward again. And we're seeing a lot more.
With the current conditions with coronavirus and now the riots in the U.S., does that affect your writing? Does that affect the way you do things now?
It does and it doesn't. I'm home all day anyway, and my husband has a job where he works in an office all by himself. So in that sense, our life hasn't changed. We do wear a mask when we go to the supermarket and that sort of thing, but our lives haven't changed that much. But it is all going on, and I can feel that, and I know that. And being a depressive person anyway, that weighs heavy on me. So it does affect my writing. It can slow it down even. Mm-hmm. I'm a slow writer. This book took me, well, I expected it to come out 6 months after the Bathhouse book, and it actually took me 6 months longer than that. Greg puts out a book every day, and
yeah,
obviously I'm exaggerating, but he's very prolific, and I would love to.
I wish I could do a book a day.
Yeah, and, most people go into the bathroom on their cell phone, but he goes in and writes a book, right?
Now, if Greg did a book a day, it wouldn't be good quality, and he writes good quality novels, so I know it's not that often, but you're definitely prolific, and I hope to reach that level, or at least close to it.
Well, this is one of the things that was it your most recent one with Josh Lanyon?
Yes.
Your most recent interview, or was there another one?
No, Josh was the most recent one.
Well, when I was listening to that, I couldn't believe when she said she thinks people, this is not a criticism, it was just shock about putting out a book a month. And I feel like I am pretty consistent in my pace, but I don't even come close to a book a month. I mean, that's a lot of product.
I know a writer who will remain nameless who puts out a book a month,
uh-huh.
and sometimes two, and his goal is three. And you would, he has a strong following because people like his characters and they like his stories. Now, is it the best written novels? Some would say yes, some would say no. They're good.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll never reach that.
But I think maybe it was in that conversation. I think you said something like you really do believe that quality is more important than quantity, and I would agree with that as well. It's really about making the best piece you can make before you release it, whatever that timeline looks like.
Yeah, it was actually Josh that said that, but I agree 100%.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it depends too. Yeah.
If it takes me a full year to write a good quality book, then that will be my speed. I'd like to speed it up, but I'm not going to do it at the expense of the quality of the novel.
And Al, you have a lot of projects going on at the same time, right?
I always have six or seven every
year. Yeah. What's the process like there?
Well, I have to have that because when you're doing true crime or nonfiction, you are getting a lot of facts together. So you have to put your word out. So when you're doing a story, you have to contact family members. You have to contact, you know, in my case, prisons and cops and doctors and all this stuff. And the problem is you don't get word back right away. So you open a file and you start putting things in and setting up appointments and going and doing things as you can. And so if I just did one book, there's a lot of times I would be have nothing to do for a month or two, or sometimes longer. So you start working on another, and so I just I've always got a lot going at the same time because it takes a while to gather the information. See, and that's why it's different, because I can't just make up stuff about a character or create them or decide what they should or shouldn't do or be. So it's a different sort of type of writing.
I agree, but I also understand where you're coming from, Al, because I have another series that's in my head. It will take place in the 1920s. And the way that came to me is, in my Mitch stories, I do a lot of research on L.A., and I give a background of all the different neighborhoods. It's a very diverse city. And so I give some background on MacArthur Park and how it developed as an exclusive upscale neighborhood to a very downtrodden neighborhood that is today, and in other cities, how they developed or neighborhoods and how they developed Koreatown. And so I did a lot of research, and I found I loved that research. And I found myself going deeper and deeper into it. And so now, while I'm writing these Mitch novels, I'm still doing research for this other series that I'll eventually start on the 1920s. And finding about gay life in the 1920s in L.A. is very difficult because it was not the same as like Chicago or New York.
Right. And that's very important in any type of book. I think that might be the difference. For me in the true crime, I do the same. So you have to set up the atmosphere of what was going on and what it was like to live in that place in time to help put the story in context, and that's probably the same for you. And I think that might be, you know, because people in true crime that like Nigel Cawthorne and stuff, they write a book a month. and I think that's what's different about his book as compared to mine, because you don't get any of that in his book. You're getting what happened and how it happened, and that's it. So there's no, you know, there's no context around that, so you don't really get the feeling of what was going on in the city and what the police were like and how they treated a crime and all that. So that's all missing.
Well, do you interview a lot of police officers and get involved in that part of the stories when you're researching for your true crime novels?
Oh yeah, I love cops.
Okay. See, and there's a reason why I have a PI, and that's because police procedurals, though I may enjoy them, I don't want to write them because there's so much research involved in that I'm not necessarily as interested in the research of a community. I like that my guy can sneak into a window and walk, you know, go around the house and observe what's going on there. a cop can't do that.
Right. Right. Oh, there you go. So don't cross this guy, Greg.
Yeah, he'll climb in your window, Greg.
Yeah, be careful. Be careful. Yeah. I see trouble happening here. No, it's a totally interesting interesting world, but you know, you never know, Brad. You could get further and faster than you ever thought you would, and I say that because I came from that, and I never thought I would be a writer, and here I am, and you know, I'm an autistic kid that was told, you know, a lot of things from the 60s. So I had no, it was never in my mind to be a writer.
Well, I'm currently outlining the third Mitch novel, and I can't imagine that it will go as long as it took the second book. I think it'll be much faster. It won't be a few months, but it won't be over a year like the last one was.
And this is a body on the app? Body in the... Where's the body?
On the app? What?
Well, you got to get the app in there, modern day, and it's got to be a body. Body on the hill, body in the bathhouse, body in the bar, body in the bed, body in... I don't know.
I'll be happy to give you the title.
Yeah, let's hear it.
It's A Body, a Bear, and a Blade.
A Body, a Bear, and a Blade?
Ooh. Correct.
Oh, cool.
There you
and
go.
we're not talking about the type of bears you find in the woods. Well, maybe at Griffith Park, but
yeah. Brad, what makes you feel like it'll take less time to write this? What do you feel is different about the process here?
The way I'm outlining it as quickly as it's going, the way the characters are developing so quickly for me, and I mean, I'm having a little hard time with the clues.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's very important for me to have that before I ever begin the book.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they may change completely as I go forward, that whole process is coming to me so quickly, and so many scenes are in my head that I'm taking notes on. That's why I think it's going to be quicker than the last two novels.
Cool.
What do you think's more important, or what side do you think you fall on more? You fall on the person that writes concerned about the grammar, the grammar, spelling, technique, or are you more a story and how it makes you feel?
I hate math. And graphing sentences and learning punctuation and grammar in school, to me, was just like math. So I tell people I'm a great storyteller. And I'm grateful for proofreaders and my editor. So they're both important, but my skill is more in the story side.
So you're like Madonna.
I don't know what that means.
Well, more in the end of the story. It's more about the feeling. It's more about getting a story across to someone where they understand it, they feel it, they get it, and they're not concerned about being the best technique writer or grammar or speller.
Well, as I said, the grammar and the spelling and those things are important to me. I don't want to put a book out that has a lot of those errors, and I do focus on those as much as I can, but that is where I do rely on editors and beta readers and proofreaders to help me to reach that level. But as far as me, when I'm writing, I like writing good scenes, and I love developing interesting characters and sometimes quirky characters.
It's interesting. So are you going to try your hand at other types of writing?
Right now I don't really have a desire to do anything other than mystery. It tends to be all I read, which really is kind of wrong. I really should branch out and get more diversity. But when I sit down to read a book, mystery is all I want to read, and I should really make it more of a job and pick up a literary novel or pick up a romance and get more into that. I mean, Wuthering Heights is one of my favorite novels, so I do enjoy non-mystery novels, but for the most part, it's what I read, and I can't imagine writing anything different at this point in my life.
So what's your favorite word?
What?
Lipton's dead now, so remember, he used to be with Inside the Actors. No, what is it? What does an average day look like for you? So what do you do? What influences you? And how do you know when you're ready to write? Like, for me, I have to be in a particular place or space. I can't just write on a whim. Is that the same for you, or are you more of a, you can write anywhere, anytime?
I can't write anywhere, anytime, but it's what I try to do. I spend Mondays working on my podcast, and then Tuesday through Friday, my husband leaves for work around 9. So my goal is from like 10 to 5 to sit my butt down and write. That is my goal. Now, it's really hard at 10 a.m. to sit down and say, okay, I'm magically creative all of a sudden. So I'm not always successful at it, but that is what I try to do. I do outline, and I do try to have a regimen, number of words to write a day, which can be different each day. But for the most part, that's what I try to do. The negative in that is if I have an appointment in the middle of a day, it totally throws my whole regime off, because that's the way my brain works. It's almost an all-or-nothing thing. I can still do a little bit in the afternoon and maybe in the morning, but psychologically it's tough for me.
That's interesting. And so is there inspirations for you when you write?
Inspirations?
Like if you can't, let's say you're in a mood where it doesn't seem to work for you or something, what helps you or inspires you to write? Is it like music? Is it movies? Or is it just going for a walk? What kind of works for you?
Well, sometimes it's going to a different location. I tend to work from home, but sometimes I will go to a coffee house, and the environment and having people around me will help to get that creative side going with me. I don't listen to music other than maybe new agey music, which I'm not really a huge fan of. But if there's a song playing that has any kind of lyrics, that's all I hear. So I can't write with music on, and I'm amazed that some people can. I would be writing the lyrics down instead of writing a story. But going for a walk does help. Sometimes I just will type out a sentence, and that's the best I can do. And then I'll just find out, I'll clean house, or I'll find something else to do. But as I said, that 10 to 4 or 5 is my goal. Doesn't always happen.
Depends how much coffee you get.
Well, that's true. And I used to be a pot a day or two pots a day, and now I'm trying to cut it out. So.
So now your podcast, is it once a week? Is it what's the schedule for that?
It is once a week. It's it drops every Thursday morning, and it's a different guest every week, and we just talk about, just like this show, their writing style. We talk about their life and shoot the breeze.
Although I'm going to jump in here, Al, and point out that Brad likes to do questions authors hate at the end of each episode of his podcast. So I'm trying to think of a question Brad would hate for the end of this interview.
Well, I did change that, Greg. I changed it to awkward questions authors.
Okay. Now, I mean,
it used to be
so
called
better.
Yeah, it used to be questions authors hate, and I realized there were only so many questions that we really hate. But there are a lot of awkward questions that we get. So I did change the name of that.
Okay.
But I spin a wheel, you know, like, and they listen to the blank noise until I put the wheel in later. And then I ask them a question that is awkward for a writer to answer.
Yeah, like top or bottom, like what?
Well, I guess that could be important depending on what they're writing, but generally, no, I don't ask if they're a top or a bottom.
I don't know what. Have you done any book signings or anything like that yet?
No, I haven't. It hasn't been in the cards for me as of yet. I don't see it as being as big of a deal as it used to be. I hear a lot of independent writers that say they just sit in the bookstore and maybe one or two people that they know come up. It's not like the old days where, if that ever existed, where you had a traditional publisher and they would fly you around and you'd do these big, heavily promoted book signings. I don't know if that ever existed, but that tends to be what we believe used to be. I don't think that's true anymore. Hmm. So the only times I've done book signings is when I've done some kind of I'll do a seminar on writing or seminar on what it's like to tradition or to self-publish, and I always have my books there and I'll sign those. But that's the only time I've ever done that.
Wow, you know, yeah, they're not all they're cracked up to be, but the last one I did in November, there was a, you know, I got about 200 books sold.
My goodness, but you've been around a while. You've got how many books do you have?
16. I haven't been, you know, Ash there is way bit way more than I am. He's writing one right now. You know, he's. He's sending it in right now. It's just
Greg, stop it and listen.
No, I just want to find a question that authors hate. I'm really trying to find one for Brad.
The question I got at the book signing most often was, well, not question, but they would. There's always that person that comes up and says, well, I write, and how do I get my book published?
Oh, that's a good one.
Oh, and, that is.
You know, and I always just go, wow. And the work, well, you know, I always tell them that the best thing to do is to find a really good editor or proofreader to start. And quite often you'll get a response like I got one that this lady said that, but I wrote this, it all came from God.
Mm.
And I wouldn't want to change it.
Mm.
So, you go. And I was like, well. Yeah, it's like, so what do you say to that? So I find that to be the most awkward, because people come to you for some sort of writing advice, as in getting a book published or something, and I don't know. I don't know.
No, that's a good one. Yeah, Brad, what would you say? What would you say to, or advice to new authors in general?
Well, I'll tell you, I want to give one more question that gets asked than what Al just said is,
yeah.
Will you read my manuscript?
Oh,
yeah, same idea.
Oh, that's a tough one. But what my best advice to new writers would be: don't write to sell, just write.
Mm-hmm.
Write what you love to write. Write, just and keep writing, and of course keep reading, which you hear all the time, and it's very important to keep reading. I interviewed Lev Raphael recently, and he said, reading is writing to a writer, mm-hmm. and he's 100% correct in that. And so my advice would be to read, but also write, and develop your skill. Focus on each scene.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You actually go to scenes or places you have written about to see what they feel like and what they look like and what they're, you know, pick up some sort of vibes that way?
Yes, I do. It's interesting. I used to live near Silver Lake and spent a lot of time in Silver Lake area of Los Angeles. And I was writing A Body in a Bathhouse. The bathhouse actually is in Silver Lake.
I was going to say, so which bathhouse did you go to?
And
Wow, that was the question authors get. That was it right there.
None for this particular book. I have a good memory. But I wanted to write about Silver Lake, and I thought, it's been years since I've been over there. So I got on Google Maps, and I looked around, and I said, oh, my God, it's totally different from what I remember. So I had to go drive over there and spend a little time and walk around and got the different feel that Silver Lake has than what it used to have. And I'm glad I did that. Otherwise, I would have been totally off base for what it is today, because I do write current.
Mm. Yeah, it does. Yeah, it makes a difference. Okay, so let's talk about, do you have a website or do you have a place people can go to find out more about you?
Absolutely. All they need to do is go to bradshreve.com, and they'll find links there to purchase the books, as well as a little bit about me.
Okay. And your podcast, does it have a website as well?
GameMysteryPodcast.com.
Wow, that's a tough one to remember.
Yeah, I think they're both hard.
Well, Brad, this has been fascinating. I'm glad you took the time to come on and talk about what goes on in your life, your writing, your podcast, and everything else. And I hope it keeps going well for you.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. And as a podcaster, now being a guest, I'm concerned when I listen later how many times I said
Yeah, well, it's not too many. And
oh, good.
Not too many. Actually, I didn't get, I didn't notice a lot of that. Or the other one, you know, and you know, and you know, like that one's the one that I...
Mine is well, and then I start the sentence. But
yeah.
Thank you for having me on. It's been great. I've had a lot of fun.
Yeah, and of course, we'll put your book and your website up on ours so that people can do one click and pick up the book or check you out, and we'll go from there. So again, thank you very much for being on the show. Our guest has been Brad Shreve, and we've been talking about the Gay Mystery Podcast and his latest book, A Body on the Hill, which is a Mitch O'Reilly mystery, and it's book two.
Mystery Radio Show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
it. Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery Radio Show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.